Welcome to Season 3 of the Climate Conscious Podcast. I'm your host, Deval Bazzi, bringing awareness to climate change and sustainable development from a Caribbean perspective. Connecting you to sustainability solutions as we move from awareness to action. Today's special guest wears several hats. Based in biodiversity-rich Ecuador, he is an author-illustrator, an educator, and a conservation biologist. His work is inspired by the majesty and fragility of nature and the need to do everything we can to protect it. He combines his artistic creativity with his technical experience and knowledge to create scientifically accurate educational graphic novels full of quirky comic humor and fun action that also bear a message about how everyone can help preserve nature. He is the author and illustrator of 5 non-fiction graphic novels for middle grade children, among which his main ongoing focus is the Captain Polo series about climate change. I am delighted to welcome to the Climate Conscious Podcast, Alan Hess. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Deval. That was quite an introduction. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you for joining me.
That's a pleasure.
So I'm really excited to get into your work in producing graphic novels related to climate change. You're actually the first author illustrator that I have met, you know, doing this type of work, which I think is so important because education and awareness is the first step to action.
Yeah.
So how did you get involved in this space?
Well, you know, I've always drawn cartoons and little comic strips just for fun, even when I was a kid. And so, you know, the jump to make that count for a higher purpose kind of happened in the year 2000. It's quite a precise moment that I remember quite well. And I was working as a conservationist at the time in Bolivia, in eastern Bolivia. And WWF, the local office of WWF, asked me to do a calendar for them about fish. And I'd never done anything like this before for conservation. And I did the calendar for them. I did the drawings. And I realized that I could actually turn in this into, you know, drawing things like cartoons could actually become something quite useful. And so from then on, I decided to do that more systematically. And one thing led to another. And I ended up creating graphic novels and comics because I wanted to bring in the element of storytelling, you see. Because through storytelling, you can not only entertain your reader, but you can also deliver messages. So I kind of put the two things together, and that's how it started.
Well, it's so important to tell the story of climate change. At one point, it used to be a future event, but right now we're actually living through the event of climate change.
As you say, we are living it. We are living it now, and especially in the global south, people are feeling it a lot more directly and on a daily basis, which in the north, people, you know, one tends to forget. And in the global south, it's a very real and a very scary thing, even more so than for the rest of the population in the north. So children are growing into this future, which is quite uncertain, because one of the aspects of climate change is, of course, the uncertainty. You know, in technical terms, one talks of deep uncertainty, where you don't, not only do you not know whether it will rain or not in a certain season, but you don't know what will happen in its stead. There's a deep uncertainty about climate change, and this is very scary for everybody. So I think for children it's especially frightening because it's their future we're talking about, and you know, they're seeing adults freak out about this. Quite rightly they should be, but you know, adults, we need to keep the message positive. So the story needs to be told as it is. Children need to understand the gravity of the situation. That's the story that you need to tell. But I also have to give it a positive edge and an actionable edge where the message is that children can actually get involved with their families and start being part of the solution. And solutions that there are, they do exist. And there are many ways that one can feel empowered. And I think children need to feel empowered. So I use my books in that way, you know, as a storytelling vehicle to empower the children.
I like that, a storytelling vehicle to empower the children. And you mentioned deep uncertainty, and that is very, you know, worrisome. It's scary, even to adults, much more for children who are inheriting this wounded planet.
That's right. It's, you know, there's so many terms and concepts that have arisen over the last 2 or 3 years, and one of them is climate anxiety. And it's a thing that is being more and more talked about in the, you know, in the relevant channels. I sometimes wonder if I sometimes suffer from climate anxiety. And I think it's a feeling of deep anxiety where you feel that it's all too late. But of course, we can never go with that message, right? We can never go with that message that it's too late. And this is a subject that I do bring out kind of, you know, expressly and very obviously in my books. And in one of my books in particular, through the use of caricature, I'm able to kind of, you know, in a way, heap ridicule on, in a funny way, on the sense of doom and gloom, on the sense of there's nothing more we can do, it's all too late. It's agreed, you know, among all climate action practitioners that that is not the route. We cannot afford to go down that that rabbit hole. Right? So that's another message that is important to tell in the story to the children.
But tell us a bit more about the main character, Captain Polo. I know you have a series that focuses on Captain Polo.
That's right. There are 4 books now, and I'm already starting to research the 5th one. And it's Captain Polo is a polar bear, but he's not just an ordinary polar bear. He starts off as an ordinary polar bear, but he becomes a messenger for climate change, education and action. Through the books, he evolves. And I chose the polar bear because everybody, even though you may not have seen one in the wild, I haven't, but it's an iconic species. It's an iconic species that everybody has heard of. It's a very present species in graphically, you know, in the media. In some ways, it represents climate change because it's one of the first wildlife species to, like the large predator, apex predator, to feel the effects of global warming in its Arctic home. And so, and the other thing is, for some inexplicable, for some reason, all children love teddy bears. All children love fluffy bears, and and I know I do. So I think adults do too. There's something about bears which is really endearing. If you look in the, you know, in the film industry, the cartoons, the characters, you know, there's Winnie the Pooh, there's Paddington, Smokey Bear was very widely used in the U.S. You know, against forest fires. There's something about bears which are iconic. And so I chose that character, and Polo is, he's a world traveler. He's a bear who, as I said before, starts off as just an ordinary bear who wants to go home. But he evolves. He's anthropomorphic, which means he can, you know, sail a boat. He can talk any human language. He can even use cash, which is handy. And as he goes through his epic global journey, he learns more and more about the effects of climate change on different people, ecosystems, and cities, and also other species of wildlife. And he has empathy for the downtrodden. He has empathy for the first climate victims, you know, these people who are living on the edge of survival anyway, who are living in poverty, who are struggling with the very basic services like access to education, access to clean water, people who live on low-lying islands, for example, who are all too affected by these effects of global warming. And so Polo has empathy for these human groups, and he brings back these messages to the rich and powerful in other countries. And because he's a bear, if they don't listen to him, he just knocks them into the ground and makes them listen to him. So there's that element of fantasy where by having a non-human character as the hero, I can get away with quite a lot of things.
If only we could do that in real life with some of deniers.
Exactly. He just, you know, Polo is a bear who will storm into, he'll rush past security. Anyone who gets in his way, he'll just knock them into the sky, and he will go straight to the source to deliver his message. Because he's very strong. He is a polar bear, after all. And he's intimidating physically. And these are all really great assets when you need to make an impact. So that's Captain Polo in a nutshell.
Well, I think we can all draw inspiration from Captain Polo, you know, as we face the climate crisis.
Yeah, that's the idea.
And we understand the importance of education in driving change, changing attitudes and behaviors. But your graphic novel has highlighted the role of, you know, non-formal education, which I think could drive the point home even more forcefully in terms of climate science, identifying climate victims, and also promoting climate action, climate solutions.
That's right. It is non-formal education, and I think education is valid and in all shapes and forms. You know, I have to tell you a story very briefly. When I was at high school, I took for the first time in my life an economics class. I didn't have a choice. It was part of the curriculum. And I knew nothing about economics, and it all seemed quite daunting. And on the first day, the teacher did two things that I will never forget. First of all, he asked this fellow student to give them, at the time I was living in France, and this was francs. So he asked the student to give him a 100-franc bill. And he tore the bill in half right there and said, money is worthless. What matters is what money represents. And then, you know, he gave the student 100 francs back from his own wallet. But he made his point, right, using imagery. And the other thing he did was he introduced us to our first textbook for the economics class. And the textbook was called The Adventures of Asterix the Gaul, Obelix and Company. And anybody who knows this very famous French series of comics from the 60s and 70s, Asterix, will know what I'm talking about. It's basically a graphic novel. In it, one of the characters decides to exchange the traditional bartering system of Roman times Gaul for currency. And of course, the dynamics of the village in which they live completely changes. And so that was the first textbook. It was a comic, is what my main point is. So, you know, that's non-formal education. And that lesson has stayed with me for about 40, well, almost 35 years. And so I believe in education being entertaining. I believe education is so much more powerful if it engages your emotions. And, you know, the use of humor is something, of course, that I specialize in. And graphic novels and comics are the best, are really great medium to express humor and in all sorts of very visual ways, and also through the text. And so I believe in the power of those elements as well. Add those to the storytelling, plus really well-researched science and technical information, and you've got yourself a product which is a great learning tool.
Yeah. So we're talking about what I would call edutainment.
Yeah.
And, same. You know, with your graphic novels, you've done a great job of bridging the science and the arts. And I observed on your website, you spoke about that we're in the age of information, but with so much information out there, there's also the issue of information overload and people just tuning out because it's so overwhelming. So when you can present important information, important messages in a fun and enjoyable way, it will break through the noise.
That's the idea.
You know, because what I've found in this climate change and sustainability space is that people arrive here from a variety of backgrounds. And I mean, you had your defining moment when you switched from conservation biologist to author illustrator, but I know everyone kind of has that defining moment, that spark that leads them to become more actively involved in climate action.
Yeah.
And there's so much work to be done. So we really need to reach as many people as we can and just show them that there's space for them. There's space to get involved in whatever area you're interested in.
That's right. You make a great point, Deval. And, you know, I believe that everybody has a skill, a talent, an ability or a passion, that, you know, depending how you want to call it. There's always, everybody has something that makes them get up in the morning, right? And it could be singing, it could be theater, it could be, you know, drawing, anything like that. And there's so many things that can be turned to a higher purpose. And it's very motivating to do that, you know. And the other thing is, as you alluded to, we need to start talking when it comes to climate education. We need to start talking outside of the technical circles, right? What I find, one of the things I find kind of frustrating in my scientific world or the world of conservation is that conservationists are really great at speaking to each other. But it's a lot harder to speak outside that circle.
Yes, that is so true.
And with a thing as important as climate change, which is an existential threat to all life on Earth, it's nothing less than that. We can't afford to just have the specialists talking amongst themselves. You know, whatever it is you know, or whatever it is you can do to inspire others, even if it's just to share some awareness, which is all I'm doing at the end of the day. It's important to do that outside the circles of those in the know, you know. So that means talking to those people who don't necessarily have a background in such things and maybe not even an interest in such things. So there's another argument to apply those messages through entertainment. And we know we're seeing it. We've been seeing it for a number of years now with animation movies like Blue, you know, which is all about an endangered parrot in Brazil. That's an example of edutainment, isn't it? Where using fiction and storytelling to tell a story about conservation in a very compelling manner.
Yes. And I'm glad you raised the point of talking outside the scientific circle, which has been a pet peeve of mine, because, you know, when you stay within those circles, you're basically preaching to the choir.
That's right. Absolutely.
We need people like you to translate that scientific knowledge into bite-sized, you know, chewable bites that anyone can digest.
That's right. Anyone can digest and generally become interested in, you know, so that they can go off and spark new conversations among their peers and you know, and find out more for themselves. And, you know, along those lines, that's why the graphic novels that I do, they always have a sort of a technical section at the back, you know, like a glossary, or I call it Captain Polo Climate Change Classroom. You know, and it's, again, it's still simple language. It's still quite palatable and easy to understand, but it kind of like outlines the main principles and terminology, because it is a very confusing and overwhelming field, isn't it? It's climate change is an overwhelming subject.
Yes.
To get a grip on.
It's a lot. It's a lot, you know, and that's why it can induce climate anxiety.
Yeah.
And I guess we all have different coping mechanisms. So for me, when I think about the magnitude of the problem, I chose to do something to raise awareness. Coming back to the same concept of bursting out of that specialist circle and bringing the knowledge to the man on the street.
That's right.
You know, so
that's
that was right. My way of making an impact. It may seem small, but I'm of the belief that it all adds up.
It does.
Know? And as simple as stimulating thought and stimulating conversation,
yep.
I think that is an important first step.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, look at what we're doing right now. We're creating synergy. You know, here's you with your podcast, with a very, very clear title, The Climate Conscious Podcast. And here's me, one of those who are using, you know, creative storytelling for that purpose. And here we are discussing. And so I want to take this opportunity to thank you and applaud you for your podcast, because it's really this sort of thing that we need more of, you know. And it's great that you're doing what you're doing. It's really good.
Thank you, Alan. You know, one of the things that I like about what you're doing is that you place the focus on least developed countries,
yes.
The global south. where we know climate change is having the largest impact.
Yep.
So tell us a bit why you chose to place the focus there.
Well, I mean, I basically lived all my life in the global south. I was born in Pakistan, and I've lived in India, I've lived in Oman, I've lived in, countries like that, Syria even. I used to live in Aleppo, imagine. That no longer exists, as far as I know. I come from a family where I've always lived in the global south, not necessarily geographically speaking, like south of the equator, but the global south in terms of, economics and global power, you know what I mean? And so I have a deep affinity to that, to those kind of countries. And I mean, I'm living in Ecuador now, which is part of the global south. And before that, I lived in Colombia. And before that, I lived in Mexico. And before that, I lived in Bolivia for 20 years. And all of these countries are global south countries, and they all face similar challenges, much as many, many countries in Africa do and Asia. And so I have a lot of empathy for these societies who are facing very proximate, there's a large amount of disproportion, in the populations of these countries with regard to equity, whether it be economic equity, gender equity. There's so many haves and have-nots. And there's a big gap in between. And this is just prime, if climate change were a bacteria, this would be prime breeding ground for this bacteria, And so when I'm talking about climate change around the world, firstly, I have a geographical interest in the whole planet because of just who I am. I just love traveling. I love geography. I love maps. I love drawing maps. I get a real kick out of drawing maps of places I've never been to, because I get to research and explore the coastlines and stuff like that. And, so I have a natural inclination to the geographical aspect of things. And because of my life experience and professional networks, I do have access to inside knowledge about the realities of many parts of the world that are, away from the traditional Northern Hemisphere, developed countries. And also, it's really inspiring to see some of the innovation coming out of least developed countries, right? There's so much contrast. There's so many contradictions in these countries. A country like India, which is an emerging economy, but still kind of least developed nation in many ways, it has also got an incredible industry and this incredible addiction to fossil fuels. And at the same time, perhaps one of the world's fastest growing adoption of alternative energy. And so you have, like solar, for example. So you have these incredible contradictions. And also in places like India and Pakistan and Afghanistan, you've got these really inspiring female leaders who emerge out of nowhere, and show the way forward in ways that, people in the States or in Europe would do well to learn from. So all this is fascinating material to kind of bring in. And in a way, my books are a shout out and a celebration of the global South, because I make sure I put the champions of climate action there as well, They're not only about the problems, they're also the solutions. And so in my latest book, Pole to Pole, there's climate activists, but they're not Swedish activists. They're from Senegal. And Paulo goes to Senegal and meets them. And so I highlight the activism in West Africa. And I know there's a lot of activism in East Africa. And I know there's a lot of activism in the Caribbean, as there is in Latin America. So it's great. I think it's good for children who are my target audience are mainly, 9 to 12 year old children who are in the States or in England or in the English speaking North, including Australia, which is the only one in the South. And I think it's important that the kids from these countries, relatively privileged societies, I think it's important that they realize where they stand in the world. What their actions also influence people who are very far away, and that the climate problem is affecting everybody. So it makes us all one big family. And guess what? A lot of the solutions, and especially when it comes to adaptation to climate change, there's a lot going on in the global south. And I think kids need to, you know, little blonde kids with blue eyes in the north need to understand and appreciate that. And it just makes them feel more like world citizens, you know. And it's all about being a world citizen, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you are definitely a world citizen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very proud to think. I'm very proud to say so.
Here in the Global South, we need as many advocates and allies in our pursuit of climate justice.
Yep.
Because when we speak of climate change, you can't speak of climate change without speaking about the inequality and the inequity and the privilege that exists and that is exacerbated by climate change itself. It's such a complex issue, but I'm very pleased to observe that many solutions are originating from the Global South itself. In particular, there are some originating right here in the Caribbean, and I've featured a couple of them on the podcast. So there's a lot of action happening, and I am happy that you are using your talent to bring attention to it. You know, your book is global, so the message is getting out there.
That's it. It is global. It is. And I want my audience to expand. I don't want them just to be people who look on Amazon in the US, right? I would love the books to be in every school in the world, you know? I mean, why not? Why not? And I'm working towards that, by the way. It's about getting the right contacts, you know? It's about meeting the right people. And shows like this really help. Because who knows who's listening, you know? So I'm gonna make sure, by the way, that Polo visits the Caribbean at some point, and I'm gonna bring in some solutions from the Caribbean,
awesome.
as well as some great food.
Yes, we have a lot of that.
Yeah, I know you do. I think you have the best chili sauce in the world.
Oh, papa sauce.
Yeah.
You like the heat? Yeah.
Oh, God, I love it. I'm going to have Polo have some, for sure. You see, that's an example of the kind of thing I like to do in my books. I like to bring in these cultural things. And it doesn't have to be related to the message. It's not all work and no play, you know. The stories have a lot of play in them.
Right.
And Polo, you know, and the other characters, like his friend Penguin, you know, they try out new foods and whatever, you know. I mean, when I take them to the Caribbean, I think I'll have Penguin, who's kind of like a badass character. I think he'll have him just drink a bottle of Papa sauce like it was Coca-Cola, you know? And Polo will try it and his hat will just like shoot off into the air or something. But I do love bringing these cultural elements into the book. It's another way of celebrating diversity.
Yes, and that's one thing the Caribbean is known for, its diversity.
Oh, yeah.
So you'll have a lot of material for one.
I'm already looking forward to it.
Yes. And like you said, you never know who's listening. So I encourage all my listeners to check out your series, Captain Polo series, and your other climate-related books. Where can we access your books?
Well, they're all on Amazon, of course, in ebook and paperback. But, you know, in the Caribbean, I don't know if you can easily get Amazon. I know I can't get it in Ecuador.
Yeah, we can.
You can? Okay. So that's one place to go. You just have to, I guess, type in my name. But if you do that, make sure you include the initial, the J, which is for James. So it's Alan J. Hesse, H-E-S-S-E, and Alan with only one L. And otherwise, you know, the best thing, Delval, is my website. You know, my website has all the relevant links. It has book extracts, trailers, a blog. Captain Polo has his own page with his own blog. He has free resources that can be downloaded. There's a free board game that can be downloaded. There are all kinds of cool things to download which are free. You can get the first book in the series as an ebook for free by joining my newsletter. And all that's on the website. And the website is alanhesse.com, alanhesse.com. And there you have all the pages and the links, and that's probably a good place to start.
Okay, great. So, great. Alan, as we wrap up, why do you do what you do?
Ah, the question always is why. That is the basis of anything one does, is why you do it. And the reason I do what I do is because I believe that we can all do something to make our world a better place. And I also believe that if you're good at something, I believe you have the chance of making it count for a higher purpose. And so that's what I believe. And that's why I do what I do.
Awesome. Well, I enjoyed chatting with you, Alan, about edutainment and climate education. And I'm really happy that this resource is available for children to be exposed and to explore the issue of climate change and more so climate action from a global South perspective.
That's absolutely a good way to sum it up. Thank you so much, Bedwell, for having me on the show and having a chat. It's been really good. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to the Climate Conscious Podcast. If you haven't already, please subscribe and connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at The Climate Conscious. And be sure to check out the Climate Conscious Lifestyle Kits.